Greetings. Welcome to Women in Fire Radio Show, community involvement and why is it important in the fire service. We'd like to thank Fire Engineering for allowing Women in Fire to be part of their radio show series. I'm Lisa Baker, recently retired battalion chief with the Oakland Fire Department and a trustee for Women in Fire. Today, we'll be discussing the importance of community involvement in the fire service. We all realize the impact COVID-19 has had on our nation and the fire service. The fire service has had to change many aspects of their response matrix, as well as how we stay engaged in the diverse communities that we serve during these past 9 months. Many programs offered by communities have had to be put on hold or redesigned so that the fire service could remain engaged in the community. Our hearts and prayers go out to all members and their families who have been impacted by COVID-19. Fire stations are the most visible example of government's investment in the overall strategy and well-being in a community. They are strategically located within neighborhoods. Firefighters work and live in the stations 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. This provides a significant opportunity for the fire service to engage in the community and be a good neighbor and not just a government entity. Community involvement and community programs should be a big part of fire department. Being involved in the community allows the community to get to know firefighters and their services provided. It allows them to ask questions and get to know the firefighters on a non-emergency basis. Many times the first interaction a community member will have with a member of the fire service is on an emergency, and this is how they will remember the department. Fire departments have the ability to change this by engaging in the community. Today, we have an amazing panel that will discuss programs that their agencies are involved in and why they feel community involvement is important. We have Latasha Clemens, who recently retired from the Boynton Beach Fire Rescue Department in Boynton Beach, Florida, after 24 years. She's now recently working as a deputy chief in Forest Park, Georgia. She has a huge passion for community involvement in the fire service. She is a graduate of the National Fire Academy Executive Fire Officers Program. She has a master's degree as well as a bachelor's degree and a AA degree. We have Heather Mosdine, who's a battalion chief with the Oakland Fire Department. Heather has 17 years with the Oakland Fire Department. She has a bachelor's degree from UC Berkeley. She is on the emergency management planning section. And she's co-leading and developing the OFD race and equality team. And she's also the operations liaison for the citizens of Oakland respond emergencies. We have Heidi Simon, who's a lieutenant with the South Metro Fire Rescue in the Denver, Colorado area. Heidi has over 23 years of experience. She has been a paramedic for 19 years and a lieutenant for 10. She has a master's degree in psychology from San Jose State University and a bachelor's degree from Arizona State. She has a graduate certificate from Cornell University in Women's Leadership. We have Tina Takahashi, a lieutenant EMS coordinator for the Westminster Fire Department in the Colorado area. Lieutenant Takahashi has 23 years of experience. She has an associate's and a bachelor's degree in psychology. She's a CPR instructor and a BLS facility dermatology certified. So I want to thank our panel members for agreeing to join us this evening. And we're going to go ahead and I'm going to start with the questions. So Chief Clemens, what programs did your previous agency or your current agency have in place for community involvement?
Well, thank you, Chief Baker, for allowing us the opportunity to be a part of this radio show. I definitely look forward to the opportunity to collaborate with the women that's on this panel this evening. So after serving the city of Boynton Beach for over two decades, some of the programs that we've implemented in the city of Boynton Beach and, you know, currently today, our CPR program, where we allow the community and the citizens to come in and to get their hands-on only CPR training. We partner with community organizations like Boynton Strong that reaches out to the low social economic areas in order to give those folks an opportunity to get some hands-only CPR training. We've had a car seat program for those folks that want to make it come on to the fire station and ensure that they're car seats are properly installed for their newborn babies. We've recently implemented back in August 2020 an Explorers program. An Explorers program that really was established in the organization prior to my tenure, and it kind of went away. Then we had some exciting firefighters that wanted to come back on board to re-implement that program, and it's off to a great start. We've done flu vaccines during the flu season. During Fire Safety Week, we went to elementary school to read to the kids and do our stop, drop, and roll in fire safety as other organizations. Currently in Forest Park out in Georgia, we've implemented our first ever in-house advanced EMT program. We have five members that have that are a part of this training. It's very exciting because it's going to allow those young folks that are from the community or the surrounding communities to, be a part of the Forest Fire Department family. So we're very excited about that. So those are some of the programs that in my past organization that was implemented. And as I move forward with Forest Park, what we're doing currently. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Clemens. Chief Mosdean, what programs does Oakland Fire have in place for community involvement?
So at Oakland, we try to use the community involvement to sort of educate the citizens from very young to elderly. So I'll just start kind of with the youth. We do stop, drop, and roll, through our public education program, starting with stop, drop, and roll. And then we work with older kids and how to make a home exit plan and, how to call 911, that kind of stuff. Fourth and fifth graders, we work on exit drills, talking about, what they can do. And then we start talking about, health and safety and those kind of things. From there, we work with the businesses in Oakland to come up with training for them in terms of fire drills, emergency procedures, evacuations. We have a program for high-rise and residentials, fire drills, emergency evacuations, that kind of stuff. We do community service. We visit block parties. Obviously, this is pre-COVID. Community first aid and CPR. We offer classes to educate the public in those things. We have a history of a program called CORE, which you mentioned, Citizens of Oakland Responding to Emergencies, that we're now sort of turning into a model with the National CERT program. And we also have a Fire Explorers program. So we try to get involved from youth all the way up to our senior populations too, going out into the care homes and talking to them. Obviously, again, before COVID, we haven't been out there since COVID. But just talking to them about the fire service and trying to remain engaged with our community.
Thanks, Chief Mosdean. Lieutenant Simon?
Well, South Metro Fire Rescue has a number of programs that are very similar to what the other ladies have already spoke to. We have a pretty robust life safety education program for all age groups from preschool on up through the adult classes. We also offer some interesting things through our foundation, like driver's education and CPR and babysitting classes for our teenagers. And one of the neat things that we do that's really important in this area is wildland risk assessment services for individual homeowners. And then we also offer a citizen academy, which helps to educate our members of our citizens. Usually these are made up of city council people, maybe nurses and doctors from neighboring organizations. And they come in and go through a full little academy that's designed for them, including going into a fire. And then we also have an Explorer program for our young teens from 16 to 18 and an EMT program that we offer the community. Obviously, a lot of those have been impacted by COVID, and I'm sure we're going to get into how we've overcome that in a few minutes.
Thank you, Lieutenant Simon. Lieutenant Takahashi.
Thank you, Chief. I will just say that for us here at Westminster, I actually have probably almost 2 pages worth of programs that we offer. And it makes me very proud to be able to say that. And a lot of, I think what you'll hear is a lot of similarities. So I think what I'm gonna try to touch on are a few of the programs that we haven't talked about so far. So one of the programs that we offer is a Citizens Academy, and that's a 16-week course, one night a week for 4 hours a night, where citizens can come in and learn about the fire service, and they get a very detailed class all the way down to being able to take our job-specific performance assessment test. So we put them in the gear, we put them through the maze, through the trailer, have them on their hands and knees, crawling around, really trying to create that firefighter experience for them. A play off of that, because that is such a big commitment, is I work a lot with our senior facilities and wanted to create a similar program that our seniors would be able to attend. And so we were able to, in partnership with one of our facilities, create a program that was about 7 weeks long and about 2 hours a day once a week, and bring in our gear, let the residents wear the gear, touch the gear, whatever they were comfortable with, and able to engage them and really help them to understand the fire service. We were also able to bring in some local agencies like Adult Protective Services to help explain what types of resources are out there and available for them. So that's something we're really proud of and was really fun to be able to create. Some of the other programs that we have, I think, again, are similar. We do have a youth fire setting intervention program. We, again, just like everybody else, work from preschool on up to, well, there's no end to who we'll work with or an age that we won't work with. We have kitchen safety, fire extinguisher training. One of the things that's really neat about our Citizens Academy is once you graduate from that academy, you can become an alumni in our C-Fire group, which are all volunteers. And that group has done some amazing work being able to help us purchase items like extra hoods. Everyone now has 2 sets of hoods, which for a long time wasn't a possibility. So they've really helped us along with our cancer prevention, and they are a group that's very, very involved with our department and very helpful. And I think I'll stop there, or I'll take up the rest of our time here. So
thank you all. All your departments are showing the importance of community involvement. And I think we could all attest to the fact that we do need to be involved in the community so that people know exactly what we're doing. I mean, I think there's still the perception of some members of communities that think that fire engines and fire trucks just respond to fires. And I'm sure you probably still get questions of why is there a fire engine and an ambulance on certain calls. So these programs are really great. They get the community engaged. It allows you to give out information of all the programs that you offer, which is fantastic. So the next question, Captain Clemens, is what, if any, impacts has COVID-19 had on the programs?
Wow. This pandemic has really been, I guess, trying for all organizations throughout the nation. And Forest Park and any other organization is no different. Most certainly, we've been limited in our face-to-face and our direct contact, which allows you to implement these programs more effectively because you are in contact and can touch the community more via face-to-face or direct contact. So it most certainly, in addition to financial and PPE and all those different things that all organizations has faced, it most certainly has impacted us tremendously. But the caveat to that is we have social media platforms where some of this stuff, you know, some of these programs can be delved out via Facebook Live, YouTube, and things of that nature. So that does help in how we're staying engaged with the community. But most certainly, if I had to be frank and honest about it, I've seen a significant impact on how we're even achieving these programs. In Forest Park, you know, even it's a little different from Florida from what I'm coming to understand. Some of the training programs that has been implemented has been limited. You know, the departments that they usually collaborate with due to the pandemic has limited how we even train. So all programs have been affected during this pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief Mosdean.
Yeah, in Oakland, we're a lot the same. A lot of our community outreach and engagement has really been put on pause. And even the stuff that we are able to do is different. You know, the community interaction that you have just seeing citizens on calls is different when you have goggles and a mask on. You know, it's just an added barrier to sort of the communication that you can have with the citizens. Again, when you're shopping, you know, we're constantly wearing face coverings, and it creates a different sort of interaction between you and the community. And, you know, that doesn't even touch the programs that we've had to cease because of this. We're working on getting things online. We're working on doing more Zoom training and more Microsoft Teams training. But probably like a lot of you, most of us are kind of over doing that sort of impersonal training. So we're reaching out and we're trying to, and it's forcing us as an organization to be a little more technical. But it's not the way we want to do things. We'd like to be there interacting with people face to face, you know, having those real life-changing moments for those people that we haven't been able to do. So yeah, COVID's had a profound impact on us, in our community service and our organization in whole. It's been really hard.
Actually, you both just made a really good point about, Chief Clemens talked about Facebook Live and YouTube, and then you mentioned the technical difficulties. A lot of parts of certain cities, they don't have access to computers or to the internet or to these platforms of Facebook Live, YouTube, and Zoom and such. And there's a huge part of the population, I feel, that are kind of getting left behind, so to speak, with community involvement because they just don't have the resources to be able to do it, which is sad. Because
yeah, Chief, that's a great point. That's a great point. Even the places where people used to go to be able to get network connectivity, like they can't go to those places and do that. Yeah. You know, kids can't connect at school. They can't go to the libraries and connect. So yeah, it's definitely affected people disproportionately.
Yeah, I know
the community that we need to reach out to the most seems to be the ones that we're least able to talk to right now.
Exactly. That's really.
Chief Baker, can I make a comment?
Yes, you may, Chief Clemens.
Yeah, so I'm glad Heather just brought that up. But just another caveat to that. I know in Boynton Beach, the city of Boynton, more importantly, has partnered with local cable companies and things of that nature to put Wi-Fi in the parks and you know, have the libraries more accessible for those kids that doesn't have the ability to have internet at home and things of that nature. So definitely technology has been a learning curve for all of us. So thank you.
Yeah, I think we just kind of think of, because we think everybody has access to things, and then when we really stop and look at the big picture of things, there's a large portion of the communities, like Chief Hamosi mentioned, the communities that we're really trying to reach to get these programs out, that we're probably not reaching as well as we can if we could have the face-to-face interaction with them, which is sad at this time. Lieutenant Simon.
Thanks. I think overall our department has done a pretty good job with the barriers that we've been delivered with COVID. I think that, like everyone has said, the virtual presentations are starting to get a little more, we're getting that fatigue, the computer fatigue. And so I think right now we're having a little more issue than we did earlier. We really implemented a lot of our programs virtually that could be done virtually. And we also were able to make some significant changes in the number of people that would come to other programs so that we could implement the social distancing and mask wearing. But overall, the department, the risk reduction within our department has made a pretty big effort to try and overcome that in-person stuff. And they're still doing some one-on-one things. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the different things that we've done. So I'll hold off to get more into those programs.
Thank you. Lieutenant Takahashi?
Thanks, Chief. I would say, if anything, COVID has really forced the fire service in general to be more innovative and to truly embrace social media and technology. I will say our department was, we have a Facebook page. There were some things we were doing, but this really forced us to utilize those avenues better than we had in the past. And I think we're really, as an industry, having to rethink the way that we've always done things. And I will say that I think that is a positive thing, that innovation, that thinking outside the box. How do we create this space where we can still engage with our citizens, and especially those vulnerable populations? A lot of my work has been with the senior population, and it was easy for me to go into a facility and schedule anything. We could go in there and talk about anything. So not being able to work with them face to face and really truly have that, build those relationships, has been extremely challenging, and we're still trying to work around those barriers. But I do think that as an industry, being able to embrace technology and really work to be more innovative has been a positive thing for us.
Thank you. I think the next question, some of you've already kind of hit on it, but I'll go ahead and ask it. It's, has your agency implemented any programs to keep the community engaged during COVID-19? Chief Clemens?
Well, I think we've summed up many of the programs that have been implemented. But one more addition to that will be that being that we're in this pandemic, we've engaged with the state of Georgia and partnered with Clayton County to start our vaccination, not only to our first responders, but to the community at large. There's been an internal survey that has been implemented to survey how can we partner so that some of our first responders can be a part of even vaccinating the community. Those efforts have been discussed and underway. Matter of fact, our next meeting on it is, I believe, on the 5th of this month, which will be next week, to further those communications plans to see how we're going to start that process. But that would be one additional, regularly updates with our risk assessments and risk reduction through our city council. They've been pretty engaged in trying to keep the community informed. There's four or five wards in Forest Park, and each one of those ward councils have been receiving the updates from the fire department, the fire chief, and our emergency medical divisions chief. So we've been attending those meetings in those different wards to ensure that the community is abreast of how this pandemic is affecting the community at home. So that's what we've done. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief Mosey? Chief Mosey? You're on mute.
Oops, sorry. I thought I was unmuted. I can't say that we've done any new programs, but we've tried to modify the programs that we have. We're trying to take our cert training online. I feel like this is an avenue where we really could do a better job. I think just being behind the curve with all of this, and Chief Baker, you know, from having worked in Oakland, you know, we're not on the cutting edge of technology. So I think that's something that we need to work on is getting the message out there, getting our community involvement out there on a digital platform. But then again, like we spoke about earlier, you know, that the disproportionate target audience that you're reaching. So that's kind of it's challenging. What we have done with our social media presence has gotten a lot better.
It has. It really has.
Yeah. Our social media presence is better, so we're reaching out to people. But yeah, it's far from perfect.
Lieutenant Simon.
Well, I have to agree with Lieutenant Takahashi and all the other ladies that we've had to make some pretty big changes with our technology and really reach out virtually to people. The department has replaced most of the in-person school functions with virtual presentations, which has been challenging with the kids being at home on virtual schooling as well. But I think that as they've gone on to more virtual learning, it's a good opportunity for us to be able to provide some assistance to those teachers who are challenged with the at-home, you know, online teaching. A few of the things that we've started this summer, we started a summer senior safety series. That's a mouthful, by the way. But that helped to get that senior education back into the community. And we also started sharing those safety messages by helping to do weekly distribution of breakfasts, and lunches for the schools. And that helps to serve those people that are underserved in our communities that rely on breakfast and lunch when they come to school, as well as getting a safety message out to them. Additionally, we facilitated sewing hundreds of masks and providing those masks for at-risk patients, our own personnel, and members of the community who are underserved and under sheltered or homeless. We've recently started a new program where we are actually recording who we are serving that are homeless so that we can reach out to them and make sure that they are getting the services that they need after they've called 911. And additionally, the Public Information Office has really upped our game on Instagram, and we have a YouTube channel where we've done a lot of just general education about the fire department and about what each position does on the fire department, including our dispatch center and how a call is dispatched and received. And I think that we're really lucky that we have some people that are pretty savvy, tech savvy, to implement some of these newer programs. And like everybody, we have that challenge, but our department is very supportive of continuing to get that message out. And I think we've definitely raised the bar.
Thank you. It definitely sounds like you guys are doing some really innovative things. Lieutenant Takahashi?
Yes, thank you. I will touch on a couple things other people have already mentioned, but for us, all our social media presence and our messaging has definitely changed, and we are utilizing that avenue as much as possible. One of the things we were able to do over the summer was provide parades at our senior facilities, and we were able to partner with our police department and have them partake in those parades with us as well. And it was pretty amazing to see the smiles, and it's a wave and a smile, but it was some interaction that a lot of people were definitely needing. We also were able to work with one of our facilities and call bingo over the telephone. So that was really fun. We did that every week for a month. And again, just a way for us to engage and be able to talk to people and let them know that we're still there. We are trying to create potentially here in the new year, a coloring contest at our senior facilities. For those of you that don't know, coloring is for adults too. It's very therapeutic. I'm throwing it out there. So we're trying to get that going. We also were able to provide virtual station tours, which was super awesome because at the station, you could just get on your phone, hook into the classroom, and take the kids on a virtual tour of the station. And our public education specialist was able to create, and I believe Lieutenant Simon may have spoke to this a little bit, but she called it a Bitmoji Google Classroom. So she was able to create a classroom and work with the third graders, and it's super interactive. So they can push on things and get those safety messages from inside that virtual classroom. So those are just a few of the things that we've done.
Thank you. Lieutenant Simon brought up a good point that they made masks and provided masks to the underserved population within their community and such. This might seem like an odd question, but when you're out and about in the communities, your engine companies and such, have you had people ask for masks and such? And if so, do you have extra masks to provide the community, Chief Clements?
We haven't had that experience in Forest Park, where as a fire department, that we've had the opportunity to provide masks to the community. At this point, being that I'm pretty new there, I'm not sure if council has done the same. But maybe the different wards have provided those opportunities. But I can't speak to that. And no, we haven't been asked that question.
Okay, thanks. Chief Mosdean?
We don't have a mask handing out program from the fire department. The city supply unit is handing out masks to different populations within the city. But in terms of the fire department, the best that we do is we have masks on the battalion chief buggies. So if we do have a fire, like very early on, we had a fire in a high-rise building. We had a number of people come out into the streets and none of them had their masks, right? In the belongings that they grabbed to evacuate, they didn't grab a mask. So we went around handing out the, just the dust masks to people. Yeah. So we're trying to make a concerted effort to make sure that we keep everybody safe, not just our employees, but everybody. But we haven't been, as a fire department, we haven't been handing out PPE.
Okay. Lieutenant Simon, you kind of hit on it when you said that you guys made masks and such for the underserved parts of the community. Was there anything you wanted to add to that? Or
I can say that the risk reduction specialists, I think, hit some of the more under sheltered areas and made sure that the shelters had masks early on. At this point, we haven't had the need for that, but we do carry masks on all our equipment and all our apparatus, so that anybody we come in contact with that does not have a mask on, we're able to offer. And at that point, it's just a surgical mask, a disposable surgical mask, but that just helps to keep us safe. Because on occasion, we do run into people that don't feel the need to wear a mask around us. And we just, kindly ask them to either remove themselves from our presence when we're working, or to put the mask on if they wanted to talk to us, just to protect us so that we can continue to serve them. But I think overall, our community, when they come in contact with us, has been very gracious in wearing masks. And most of the facilities that we're going to are requiring masks. So the need has definitely gone down.
That's great to hear, actually. Lieutenant Takahashi?
We don't have a mask-specific program with the fire department, but I would say we are definitely able to provide masks in situations where they're needed and necessary.
Okay. Okay, and the next question, most of you kind of already hit on it, but I'll go ahead and ask it if there's anything else you wanted to add. It's like, how do you market the fire department to your community, and how do you market the programs that you offer? And I think we've talked about Facebook Live, YouTube, Zoom, and such, but Chief Clemens, is there anything else that you would like to add to that?
In addition to what's already been said, as you mentioned, Facebook Live and YouTube and social media platforms such as that, I believe I heard one of the chiefs or the officers mention something about parades, you know, having parades. In my past organization, even current, we've been fortunate to be able to market ourselves through just having Christmas parades or Martin Luther King parades and things of that nature. Also, pancake breakfasts. You're able to market your department by even having things like pancake breakfasts, because your community gets to come into the station and have breakfast and get to learn about your organization and your service to them. So in addition to the social media and things of that nature, just being more creative and having that interface with the community with things like pancake breakfasts also helps.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you, Chief. Chief Mosdean?
Yeah, Chief Baker, like you said, the digital platform, but for us, a lot of it in word of mouth. It's interacting with our citizens on calls. It's interacting with them when we're shopping or when we're out and about, and seeing where there's a need and letting them know how we can help with that. So for us, again, COVID has changed that, because you really limit the amount of interaction wearing masks. So it's a little bit different, but we're still trying to get out there and reach out to people. And then our citizens that know, they tend to tell other citizens. So there's a lot of word of mouth in Oakland, in addition to all those other things that have already been mentioned.
That's great to hear. Lieutenant Simon?
So as I mentioned, our YouTube channel and our Instagram feed has just really blown up over the last 6-8 months. And I highly encourage people to take a look and utilize anything to repeat and recreate that for your departments. I don't think it takes a ton of extra effort, but it definitely, we've gotten a ton of good feedback on those programs. Additionally, one of our risk reduction specialists has come up with teaching a 4-part virtual course on improving risk reduction efforts for the practitioner, which is a program that's offered free to any department, any individual practitioner, and he will just set it up virtually to help the risk reduction efforts in your department during this really stressed out time. So if anybody's interested in that, they can contact me and I'll get you in touch with him. He's a very outgoing person. I'm hoping to bring him into iWomen to get him at our conference to get some of his information out. But that's one of the things our department has always been pretty good about, is sharing what we are able to create. We are pretty blessed with an ideal budget. So giving back to other fire departments is one of our missions. So if anybody's interested, definitely hit me up and I'll get that information to you.
Thank you. Lieutenant Takahashi.
Thank you. And I just wanted to say thank you, Lieutenant Simon, for mentioning that, because I can say that I'm sure they're like this everywhere, but I will speak for the Colorado group of risk reduction specialists and public education specialists, an unbelievably amazing group of individuals. And if there is something you want to try at your department, they know if it's been done, and they are more than willing to share any information they have. That they will give you PowerPoint presentation slides, any forms that you, anything and everything that they have, they will share with you in a heartbeat. So it's a great group of people that we have here. And I would be remiss if I didn't give them credit for the amazing things that they're doing here in the state of Colorado. Answer your question, sorry.
Go ahead, Lieutenant, sorry.
To answer your question about marketing, I truly believe that we, when we are out in public in any way, shape, or form, we are marketing our department. So driving the rigs, being at the store, being in the schools, every interaction we have is an opportunity to market our department and educate.
Lieutenant Takahashi, that's an excellent observation and comment. I agree with you 100%. That's why, I mean, all eyes are always on us. And so that's why we need to be professional at all times and look professional and have clean apparatus. Many times the first impression that a citizen is going to have of the fire department is from the outside of the fire station or the fire apparatus, because that's what they're going to see, or the individuals that are employed by the agency. So that's why at all times we need to ensure that our members are always acting professional in our in professional in attire as well. I want some about the mask thing. I know, and Chief Mosdean, you might want to chirp in on this a little bit. I know up here in California, at least Northern California, the California Department of Public Health has teamed up with some fire departments to do a commercial, I guess is the best word for it, on the importance of wearing masks. And I know that we have at least one member from Oakland Fire that's in this commercial saying, you know, they're doing their job to keep you safe. So they're asking, to return the favor, they're asking the public to wear a mask, wash your hands, and stay 6 feet apart. So that's just something about the masks of how to market things. Chief Mosdean, did you have anything to add about that? Or
yeah, we've done a bunch of little PR things like that, encouraging people to wear masks. We've done a bunch of hand sanitizer ads for local agencies, distilleries that, you know, have veered away from making alcohol to making hand sanitizer. So we've used our voice to be able to reach out to people and try to compel them to, you know, to be safe.
Yeah, I know right now we're all from different parts of the country. I mean, Chief Mosdean's from California. I'm from California. We have Chief Clemens, who was Florida and Georgia. And then we have Lieutenant Simon and Takahashi from Colorado. So at this point in time, all the different states are kind of at different levels of what we're doing. In California, we're still pretty the epicenter right now, unfortunately, of COVID-19. So it's really good to see that you guys are promoting the mask wearing, the hand sanitizer, and staying 6 feet apart. It's real important that we get that message out as much as we possibly can. So, Chief Clemens, why do you feel that community involvement is important and should be a part of the fire service?
Well, that's an excellent question. Specifically, I'm big on diversity and things of that nature. And we know that fire departments are an integral part in the communities that we serve. And if you know that motto, you can't see it, you can't be it, is true. All right. So I think getting out in the community and making the fire department in the community, getting beyond the walls of the fire stations, we've got to get out into those communities so that we can continue to build those relations. Not only, you know, we don't want our community to only see us in a time of an emergency, right? That's not how you really build relations. They need to see you in that non-emergent situation. And how you do that, you continue to go visit schools and daycares and do the blood pressure checks and, you know, going back and checking on the welfare of the patients that you did respond to in an emergency. Going back, see how they're doing, you know, showing them that you care, and not just picking them up and dropping them off at the hospital and you forgetting about them. Some of the other ways I think is very integral is attending those community meetings, your town hall meetings, churches, community events, you know, those reading opportunities that you can do with kids. More importantly, you know, when I was coming up, I definitely didn't see many women in the fire service, and particularly Black women. So you can't see it, you can't be it. So I think it's just very important that we're reflective of the communities that we serve, so that every person in every geographical area in your community has the opportunity to see what they can be and what they can aspire to be.
And I think a lot of you are doing that. You mentioned your advanced EMT program. I know Oakland partners with the Bay EMT program. I believe both other company officers mentioned EMT programs that they had as well for members of their community. So that's one way to get the younger generation, so to speak, into the fire service and make the fire service hopefully more diverse.
Most certainly. I think it's an excellent opportunity for not only the city of Forest Park and the department, but again, for those young folks in the community or the surrounding communities to know that they have an opportunity to be a part of something greater than themselves. So that serves. Thank you.
Chief Mosey?
Yeah, I think getting out in the community is so important. We have a really distinct advantage being firefighters to be seen as kind of like a trusted leader to people. So starting with kids, you know, we have an ability to shape the way they grow and develop and think just because they see us as a hero. So what we say means something to them. And especially when you're talking about, you know, kids that may not have every opportunity. We get to be there and we get to present an opportunity for them, whether it's reading in the classroom or teaching them fire safety. Even if it's just being a kind, listening adult, that might be an experience that they don't get every day. So we get that. We get to be, you know, the trusted leader to the middle schoolers who are struggling. And when we get in there and we teach them about job opportunities and mentoring, we get to reach out to them and maybe let them see that there's something else going on. You know, it might not be what their mom or their dad or their grandma's doing. It might be showing them a different way. It's really important for us to stay relevant to the community, for the community to see us as an asset and know that we're there, on their worst day, right? We're not necessarily just there for their fires. We're there for their medical problems, for their vehicle accidents. But also we're there for like the question that they don't know who else to call. We might not fix it for them, but at least we can help them fix it. We can get them in touch with the right person. So the more we can reach out to the community and let them know that we are sort of an all risk, all hazards, sort of, we'll help you and we'll shape you and we'll model you, the better off of an organization we're going to be. And hopefully the better off the community will be because of us. You know, it's a two-way street. And I think that we can be a really, really integral part of that.
You both just hit on some excellent points. And I know that we've probably all seen or read or heard about where fire districts mostly put on a ballot an initiative to get tax increases to help pay for a new fire station or to help fund the fire department. I know out in the county where I live in the eastern part, they've had it on their ballot for a few different times now and it hasn't passed. And you have a large growing community that has 3 fire stations that need 8 fire stations. And because people don't want to pay the more taxes, and I, you know, you don't know if it's just because people don't want to pay the taxes or they're just uneducated in all the services that a fire department actually services. I know there was one fire department that changed their name to Fire Rescue because people thought that they just responded to fire calls. And I'm sure you all still get the question, why is there a fire engine or a fire truck and an ambulance on a fire call or a EMS call, emergency call, when we respond? So I don't know if you could talk about this or not, Chief Mosdean, but I know in Oakland right now, because all cities we know are facing tremendous budget crisis because of COVID-19 and the amount of PPE they had to purchase and the overtime and staffing and such. I know Oakland they're in discussion of closing, I believe, 3 fire stations starting in January. Well, we're in January now, so I don't know if you're privy to talk to us about that or.
Yeah, there's been some discussion about browning out 3 companies, which is something that Oakland has had to do in the past. You know, I don't know the finances. So I can just speak to that. That's what's been proposed. I don't know what's going to happen. But it's a disservice to the citizens when we have to do that. You know, we have a certain number of engines and trucks to provide a level of service. And it would be super unfortunate, especially because we've been working throughout this pandemic. You know, we've been doing our best to show up and be there. And just to bring one other sort of point that's kind of in line with this, but also back to sort of the why community involvement is so important. I think all of us know that this political climate has really made people believe things that certain people say in a different way. And I think that as firefighters in the fire service, we have the ability to say things that's seen as non-biased. We're not, there's no political association tied to it. And when we say something, we're not speaking it because of a political agenda. So I think that's another thing that's sort of important for us to realize when we're trying to educate people, that we're trying to educate them for their best interest and not with a political sort of tie to it.
Yeah.
Chief Clemens, did you have something to add to that, Chief Clemens?
Yes. I think that I'm glad you brought that topic up. I'm here in Forest Park, Georgia now, and this COVID impact, man, I tell you, it has hit not only the community, but our members as well. I'm just amazed by each day, each week, one of our members are being affected by COVID. Whether it's, you know, they've gotten it, you know, externally or not, is most certainly have impacted us a lot. We know our desired staffing there is to have 21 members per shift. We know per NFPA standard, you need at least 15 to respond to any significant emergency. And when I tell you today was the first day I had to make a decision to brown out not a whole station, but at least a unit because of the impact that it's having on our members. Matter of fact, I have to speak to council about this on Monday because, you know, overtime has been rampant in the organization and you can't continue to exhaust the overtime budget. You have to do, you know, you have to make some significant changes to at least, you know, get the citizens what they deserve. So I'm glad you brought that up. These are some of the decisions that are, you know, that has to be made today and moving forward. And we're in the middle of that staffing.
Lieutenant Simon, do you have anything to add about this topic?
I think, so I have a closing statement that I'll bring up later, but on the subject of how COVID is really affecting, quite frankly, the individuals of the fire department, I think that we would be remiss if we didn't share that information. As some of you may or may not know, I was hospitalized with COVID early on in the spring. And so I had a pretty intimate experience with it. And I think that my firefighter also was sick. And just now, one of my paramedics is home with his wife, and she is COVID positive, and as is, he's being tested for his second time today. So it's still out there. Even though restrictions are being lifted in certain states, we are still responding very much to this process. And like Chief Clemens says, overtime is ridiculous. And I hope that we have some federal abilities to reimburse departments for that. And I encourage all departments to look into that. But the emergency services are still needed. We still have to be able to provide that. So browning out companies and browning out whole stations is such a disservice to our communities, but it's so necessary. And so getting out into the community and talking about how people can really prevent us from getting sick and when to call 911. We still have to continue to do those. We still have to find a way to get that information out to the public because they're calling because they're scared. They don't always need to go to the hospital, but they're afraid. And I can understand that. It's a very lonely situation. I'm reading some of the chief's comments in our chat as we're talking, and it really they're both saying that it's just rampant throughout their departments, and the contact tracing that everybody's doing is so important, so that we can identify other individuals who've been exposed and hopefully lessen the exposure overall. One of the things that we've done in our, I think most people have done, is we're wearing masks in our stations with our own people that we work with. Our chiefs are not coming to our stations on daily visits like they used to. We'll meet them in the parking lot if he has important things to say and maintain that social distancing. And I think it's really important that the community see that and know that, that the sacrifices that we're making as well, wearing masks in our fire engines, in our ambulances. But it breaks my heart to see how it's impacted all the fire departments, not just with the services that we're providing to the community that are non-emergent, but also that we're providing emergent. Chief Baker, you brought up earlier at the very beginning that many families have been affected by COVID, and we send our blessings to them. The fire service has lost a number of individuals to line of duty deaths because of COVID as well. And all of this will come out at some point, but I think we have that responsibility to let the community know that we're suffering with them and we're still there to serve them.
Lieutenant Simon, that's an excellent point, and thank you for bringing that up. I think that's really important that the community does know that.
I think also there's a really interesting, I believe it was on CBS Sunday morning, they did a little portion on how COVID has affected so many members in the United States. And it was a really moving, regardless of your political beliefs or whatever, it was just a moving documentary piece that I encourage people to look at. It's definitely encouraged me to talk to my members who are fatigued on responding on COVID patients. But it encouraged me to talk to them about that compassion level. And when they're sitting there being fatigued on going on another COVID call, when one of our medics is home with his new baby and his wife sick, we need to be open about what we're all going through so that people can be understanding.
Thank you for sharing that, Lieutenant Simon. I really do appreciate that. Lieutenant Takahashi, do you have anything to add before we close up?
Those are very powerful and relevant perspectives, and I appreciate every single one of them. I think this takes us back to how we truly mirror our communities. We're not necessarily all that different from the community that we serve, and it is important that there's an understanding what the community is dealing with, we are dealing with as well on the same level. Every second of every day, all year long. And when we can share with our community our struggles, we can really start to build those relationships. And how can we serve if we don't have a good understanding of those that we are serving? So that being able to mirror back, I think, is really important. And I'm just in awe of the ladies on this call and what you're all doing. It's very exciting to have an opportunity to get different ideas and hear different perspectives. And so I'm just very thankful for the opportunity to have been here today.
Lieutenant Simon, you have something to add?
Just quickly, I just want to also mention that emergency response only helps roughly 10% of our population. Community risk reduction, fire inspectors, and all the other things that our fire department personnel are responsible for engaging the other 90% of the community. A fire department's mission should not be limited to emergency response, and we should be really concentrating on also educating and helping our customers to take better care of themselves. In turn, that improves our working environment for not just us, but for our responders as well as for our community.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a very profound statement. Chief Clemens, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes. if I can say anything, I just want to echo whatever all the other ladies have said about how we're no different than the communities that we're serving. First responders and community is hand in hand. I want to applaud each public service person, fire, EMS, police, for continuing to go out there on the front lines and put themselves in harm's way to serve the community. And I haven't been more compelled and felt so much empathy towards even the members that I serve with in their struggle and their fight to continue to want to go out there and do the best while they're also being affected by this pandemic. I commend them. My heart is with them. You know, it's like, I want to do more. I want to do more. And how do you do more? You know, so my heart is full. I cannot do all the good things that the world needs, but the world needs all the good things that I can do. So Forest Park, here we go. Thank you for this opportunity, Chief. Thank you, ladies. I really enjoy being on this panel with each and every one of you.
So I'd like to thank all our guests tonight for being a part of Women in Fire Radio show. You shared some very interesting information. You were very honest. I really do appreciate that. And I do think it is very important that our community does know that we're there with them and for them through this pandemic. And they do see it on a daily basis. I know I see it on a daily basis. I'd like to thank all of you for responding to calls. I'd also like to thank Fire Engineering for giving us the opportunity to be part of their radio series. And thanks for listening to the show. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram and to check out our website, womeninfire.org.